go. It was a real mixture of faith perspectives and people from evangelical, conservative faith, liberal, progressive, non-church, because it was a community that was wrestling with its healing and its pain. And the largest flower pot I have ever seen in my life was sitting there up front, and people really did bring flowers, and we did the whole exchange after a wonderful service of remembrance and the right prayers of representing the different faith perspectives. But it was quite remarkable to see what happened, and it got good coverage in the papers of that night. People remarked, even some people said, I didn't know UUs did things like this, or are these people more spiritual than we knew? So it was a very interesting way for us to get introduced to the community and for our congregation to be seen as really a player in the community, and I think in a different way than some people had thought about us.
And we also told the story of Norbert Chopek and the whole role of him and trying to be a peacemaker in the midst of Nazism. So it had a wonderful tie-in, and it was just one of those times where everything really worked. And it makes us think that in other settings that the Flower Communion can work beyond ourselves.
I think one of the other things, too, it did for us is that some people, I think, had begun to call us the gay church or see the congregation as a gay congregation. And I think for two reasons. Obviously, we had a progressive policy in terms of sexual orientation, OBLGT perspectives, but also we nested a number of years ago, before we came, actually, but we grew the relationship once we were there, a number of folks from the Metropolitan Community Church tried to form a chapter here, and they were having difficulty finding space. And so our congregation offered them nesting space, and actually, we can go into that later, but for 10 years they were with us, and much of it was during this period. So in some ways, as we lifted up the peace issue, we also were able to bridge that. It gave us another way to talk about that issue and how we needed to care for all human beings and be connected and deal with the pain and hurt, which we were able to lift up in some other ways. So it was a very powerful way to kind of launch and reframe the ministry within the community.
But as part of our ministry, the whole time we've been here has been the build-up to and then the Iraqi war. And we have been really at the heart of the peace and anti-war efforts in our community. And we've been part of creating a statewide group called West Virginia Patriots for Peace. And we were both founding members. There were about a dozen of us who met in the community just to see what would happen. And from that small meeting, larger and larger meetings were held until we did get this statewide group going. And Mel helped lead some of the town meetings where we could come in, where people from all walks of life in the community and all feelings about peace and war were able to be heard and could speak. And I'm currently serving on the board. And I will say that we are struggling at this time to keep figuring out what our role is. And it's kind of like, well, we're kind of waiting for the next president of the United States as well. But we do continue holding weekly vigils that we have held now for the last 5 years.
Well, actually, more than vigils, one of the things we did is that we started a wall of remembrance from the beginning as the deaths began to happen. And we have continued that. We have continued to capture the names and the stuff. It's a football field. If you had all the panels long, it's just gotten crazily
It's gotten way too big,
too long. And we honestly really can't put it, once or twice a year, we can put it all up, which we do, to say to the community, this is what's going on. But we have, during the weekly vigils, we have a number, 10, 12, 15 panels that we do have up during a very various sites, but that people, to say, we are not forgetting, we have to pay attention, we are responsible, we're accountable, not just something that the average citizen can't forget, that we, our country, are.
But it's been amazing, the members of our congregation, people think that we are a huge congregation when we're not really, but we've had more people consistently at the anti-war vigils. I guess we call them anti-war. They're also pro-peace. Goes together.
And then recently, the other thing is that as most CUU congregations, and I think interesting in West Virginia, because West Virginia has had the highest percentage of persons who have both served and died, percentage-wise, in many of our conflicts over the years. And so there's a kind of an interesting sense of honorable service that exists in West Virginia and in many places. And even though people have had a number of doubts about this particular war. So one of the things is that we have people in our congregation who have people, sons and daughters, nephews, grandchildren, who are in Iraq or Afghanistan. We also, as we said, a number of our folks are the leading kind of advocates for peace and not being involved in war or war as a strategy. And so we've really kind of walked that line to try and make it a home and be respectful for everybody. I think we've done that pretty well. I think most recently, an example of that is that we've been involved in something called Caring Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, which is actually a statewide effort to put in place support services for military families, pre- and post-deployed, and a network of support for them, not making the troops, as I was out of the Vietnam era and the other things, knows what happened to many of the people who came home and didn't feel respected, honored, or able to engage or reconnect. And the pain of a war like this, where so much of the on-ground in the theater stuff is face-to-face, and they're killing women and children and other things, and it's extraordinarily damaging to the human beings. And a lot of them are just folks who, you know, are from the Guard here, National Guard and Reserve. And we're trying to say we have to look at people's humanity and how do we cope with that at the same time. Why do we get out of a stupid and insane war from our perspective? So beyond Carrying Beyond the Yellow Ribbon is another way of trying to do that. And our congregation is supporting that, and we're looking at ways to, you know, work with military folks and others, as well as saying that the church community cares for everyone, and that that's really what we understand faith and to be about. And we challenge folks to still say, you know, do you feel your time was worth it? I mean, if you don't, you know, how do you find absolution resolution so, in fact, you can come back and live a sane life and be there for your families and stuff? So it's been, for me, an extraordinary experience of interacting with some of the folks in this, and actually meeting some of them in their pain as human beings.
Mel, I want to go back a little bit before CareNet. We had pressure from some members of the congregation to say we should come out and say that this whole congregation is against the war and that we are a peace church. And we had others within the congregation with their families there who didn't think we should do that. And the way that we ended up handling that was to have a group form that called itself URDA, U-U-R-D-A, U-U's for Reclaiming Democracy in America. And they became the group that would then speak and use the UU name in the name of peace. And they took the UU principles and purposes and analyzed each one of them to say, this is how the war in Iraq is not following our principles, and put out a little pamphlet on that. And actually ended up presenting some of that at a GA, what, 3 years ago, 4 years ago now?
And getting it worked out through the district, working with other UU congregations in the Ohio Meadville district to at least have that as a way to ground and work with their own congregations. So it turned out to be a useful resource for some people.
And I think then the most recent thing that we've been involved in just this month is taking part in the National Religious Campaign Against Torture. And Mel has been really, I guess, the one who spearheaded that. And we hung up the banner that torture is wrong because we are seeing that torture is a moral issue and a justice issue. And so it is something we have to talk about. And actually that makes me think when we talk about, well, people sometimes say, well, politics don't belong in the congregation. Well, justice belongs in the congregation. And sometimes justice sounds political, but that's more the word we use than politics, that these are justice issues.
And this is one of the issues, too. To be honest, we've had one of our veterans from another war in the Vietnam era and stuff, and he's really one of our activists, and he's really been leading a lot of the peace charge. He's been on our case, quite honestly. Even though I was involved personally in some of the torture issues, he really was saying, where's the Unitarian Universalism in this? Where's our congregation and being a public voice? And And when I was asked to do this, or I asked if we would consider it, I heard his voice literally in the background pushing us and challenging us and say, okay, this is a way we can be a voice. I didn't know at the time that we were the only congregation. Something may have happened over the weekend, but we turned out being the only congregation in West Virginia that was really doing this. And so our
that was part of the national religious campaign against torture.
They wanted to have a congregation at least from every state that was represented in their national campaign. And now a number of about 300 or 400 congregations ended up doing this weekend. But I think we're really now committed, and our folks said, let's be committed to try and take this effort into an ecumenical interfaith arena to try and do it in our community. Because one of the other things we're involved with is a group called Stop the Hate. And that is an interfaith effort, which we're part of. And to, in a public witness every year, we pick a theme, we pick a focus, and we do a community evening and event to lift that up. And it really involves, we have now virtually every faith group in the region involved, and regardless of the theological perspective or voices. And it's become an interesting way of building and opening the ground for a series of conversations and discussions that a number of us have had about peace, about war, just war, Palestine, Israel. And we built enough of a network that we've been able to really hold major public gatherings with the support of conversation. Not saying everybody agreed, but we've been able to create that kind of arena in the community for that kind of dialogue or interface. And I guess you want to talk about Seneca, too? I guess it's one of those outcomes, right?
Seneca, too, is a group of, I guess it's about a dozen women, and all except one of them have come from the UU congregation, who said that we need to have public forums and we need to discuss some of the issues that the press is ignoring. So they have put together conversations that have been held at West Virginia State University and brought in people and had excellent attendance, and it's just another way of promoting dialogue in the community. So it's not really part of us, but I think it's part of a spinoff of some of the things that we've been involved in.
And I guess the other thing that we think about peace and peacemaking in a variety of ways, not only in the major issues, but trying to look at things like how do we help people be more peaceful in their lives in terms of sermons and meditation opportunities and resources. And we've had a number of national and international speakers around meditation resources and, you know, self-awareness. And we've become kind of a site for that. In fact, we've kind of outgrown. We've had a couple of speakers that have come in, and we helped launch them, and now we're way too small. So they're now wanting venues of 500 or 1,000 to have those speakers come back, but have given us credit for helping launch them in the community. And that's been – so we've catalyzed, and that's the other thing. That we don't always have to host things, but sometimes we can get something started. And if it makes sense, then the community will take it over. And that's been wonderful to see as well. And then we do something called we now have a meditation society that has chosen to make us their home, and again, open to the public. And so we're launching a series of just a place to come and be and to put yourself together and just be with others in peace and harmony.
And I think we're fortunate that people come into our sanctuary and it's like their first impression is this is really a warm, peaceful, safe space. And I think we're very fortunate that people can come in and feel that way, and that people, community groups and interfaith organizations want to come and be here, be in our place. And we've reached out also to the African American community through partnership programs, to the Charleston Jazz Society, the NAACP has held several concerts in our space. And we also, in the summer, we have a week-long summer camp called Creative Capers that a few of our members started about 12 years ago. And it brings together kids going into the first through the sixth grade. They come from all walks of life, and they create a community during the week using arts and science activities. And a couple of years ago, well, each year the camp has a different theme. We did the Peaceable Kingdom a couple of years ago and spent a whole week looking at issues of peace with the children and how they would get along with one another, and it was quite remarkable. We also sometimes take a theme and build it around a country, so that's also part of learning another culture from another country and
kind of break down barriers and to better educate each other about other people.
So we, quote-unquote, went to Australia, I guess, last year and had a wonderful time because Mel and I have some friends there, so we could do some internet work with them. And this year the kids are going to Egypt, so that will be another experience in getting exposed to what it can be like to live in an African country with an Arab culture.
I think one of the other things is, and this may sound crazy, but in a way, when Rosie and I, when we moved to the community, one of the things we intentionally decided to live in the east end of Charleston, even and our congregations on the west side, and collectively the east and west sides are called the Flats of Charleston because it's a hilly area all around.
It's one of the few flat places.
Only a few flat places, but also it's a place where, quite honestly, a lot of the area problems or the drugs, traffic, prostitution, crime, to some degree, had been running. And so a number of us have made a commitment to really turn that around, and we start revitalizing the east side to make it one of the most diverse communities. And actually, it's a wonderful place that we came into stuff that was already going on. I need to be clear about that. But we were able to move in and really try and become part of that revitalization. And it's really, really taken off. And bringing the arts and stuff, which we've also promoted, and really trying to do mediation and negotiation among some of the historic groups that have been at odds, and we've been able to do that.
And also, the West Side, we at least share Main Street. Although it's not called Main Street, it's Washington Street, but it connects the East and the West Sides. And the Charleston Urban Renewal Association is looking at what needs to go on the west side, and we are asking ourselves as a congregation, what is our role? How are we an institutional neighbor here and a good friend to the community?
Well, actually, last 2 years ago, what happened is I served on the east side, what they call the Main Street Committee, and our church was a member of the west side. And so we said, well, why don't we join together and do something together? And so it doesn't sound like much on the one hand, but it turned out to be for our community huge. We had a cleanup of Washington Street across the whole stretch east to west and involved kids and neighbors and business folks, and we got a breakfast donated and got all kind of folks really involved, and it's actually continuing. So it's been a way of trying to give people a positive thing to do together and make a difference. And, you know, it's laid the groundwork, I think, for what Rose was saying, for now a whole new urban renewal district. We were part of fighting for creating a larger urban renewal area, moving from 23 acres to 253. That would encompass a lot of this community right now and bring in resources and really allow us to try and attack the drug traffic and other stuff and do a home ownership zone so people can have peaceful communities. And that's been a way to bring clergy together that have been kind of in their own fiefdoms. It's been a way for us to connect across racial lines. And that we're in the process of just that happening right now. So kind of excited about its possibility. In fact, tomorrow I go to Rose and I go to a meeting to make sure this is recommended, and it will be, we're sure, to the city council for formal and final approval to be designated as this kind of zone. And it's changing the culture of what can happen there and what we expect the city to do. And it's been, again, at this point in time, quite remarkable, but there's a whole lot more work to be done. But again, it's been from this perspective about living in peace, living in harmony, that's been a guiding principle in the ministry, whether it's been within our walls, whether it's been within the religious community, our connection and relationship to the community, larger community. So I think
maybe just a final thing before we open up is to say we've been really fortunate that we have come, well, yes, it is fortunate, because it's also what we wanted. We wanted to be in a place that saw itself as an activist congregation and saw itself as being concerned about social issues, saw itself as being concerned about peace, and wanted to reach out and be really active in the community. So that's been a real draw, and I know that some of our ministerial friends, colleagues in the Charleston area are saying, gee, you get to do so much, and your congregation applauds it. Sometimes when we do things outside, the congregation feels like we should be putting more attention on them. And I think we do try to pay a lot of attention to the congregational members, but the membership also wants to be out there with us for the most part.
Well,
and
we
out
there support
there.
Them. It's not like we're just out doing all this. We are often supporting the, what we saw as the ministries of our membership. What we've been able to do is tie them in and begin for the church to see it as a network of justice-making response. And that had not been as true of the congregation. A lot of powerful individuals and pockets of people who were doing stuff, but now we're really seeing it as an institutional kind of response and interface. And that's, for us at least, feels like a important significant difference. You want to talk about the Green Sanctuary, too, and the Urban Garden real quick?
Oh, I don't know. I'm feeling like we're taking,
a lot of time.
We
talking.
Are ready to begin becoming a green congregation, which we also see as a further example of being peacemaking, because we need to be peaceful in our use of earth resources.
And we just did an urban garden this last Sunday. So
starting an urban garden that most of the children are doing.
So we have done a lot of talking, and this may or may not make sense to others, but I guess we were just trying to describe some of the things we've been doing, and you know, we'd be glad to talk more about how some of it happened, or again, we're as much interested in hearing what others of you are doing and how we can network or keep learning from one another.
Or how we can borrow your ideas for us.
Anybody out there?
I have a question. This is Mac. Having moved into the Charleston congregation, take it over after a conflict problem, where would you start if you were just coming to a new congregation and you wanted to create a peacemaking congregation? Where would you start?
Well, we started with the congregation. I mean, not being funny, we said the first thing is that we need to work on our own relationships and be peace centers within ourselves and with one another. And that was a very intentional effort to make sure people were being heard, that issues weren't hidden. We have a discussion group. It's supposedly one of the longest or continuous whatever discussion groups in the EUA, and they've been around it a long time. A lot of humanists founded originally, atheists and others, and I say that in terms of being descriptive. And sometimes people would come there and feel, because a lot of the folks are very blunt in their thinking.
Strident. Expression.
Even.
Well, passionately strident.
Passionately strident, yeah. A lot of good
as
folks.
As we get.
Yeah. And so one of the things we did is we just set up some ground rules of respect around that, and started with things like that. They had developed this wonderful behavioral covenant themselves, so we put that in our bulletin, and so that whenever anybody came in, that was a concrete reminder, because the congregation had arrived at this as what they understood it was a goal to hold, and we would. Kind of just in our early services, we just pay attention to welcoming folks and talking about our ability to reach out and be friendly and connecting. And then the same thing with the board. In terms of working with board stuff, there had been a lot of kind of vocal advocacy. And so we just simply worked on talking again. How do we work in a respectful way with one another, and how do we make sure everybody's heard and all the points are out there so that we can make the decision that serves the most people? Sounds like simple stuff, but that's what we did. And it, over time, it just created a new paradigm of relating. And new people coming in just picked that up. And so the stridency and the who had the most power kind of stuff dynamic, over about 3 or 4 years, it really flipped. And that would not be the way people would describe us now. In fact, we get feedback from outsiders that's just the opposite. About the, you know, the collaboration, the connecting, the caring warmth stuff. And it's taking the basic things and just setting some standards and kind of saying no to bad stuff and crazy stuff and affirming, supporting, lifting up, celebrating the more positive interface and interactions. And having the congregation also, and we didn't do, again, this impose this. We always were having our leadership or the congregation say, how do we want things to be? Or if we don't like what's happening now, how do we want it to be different? But not hiding stuff, but just dealing with it straight up. Does that help?
Thank you.
Is
This is Frank here. If you want, remember, if you want to ask a question, to push your star 6.
This is Christina from Raleigh. I am uncharacteristically quiet, and I don't have a question. And just wanted to assure you both that, at least from my perspective, I'm overwhelmed with the value and magnitude of what you've been doing, and I'm busy digesting it all. But I'm also, you know, although you can't hear it, applauding inside. And I thank you for sharing all this.
Thank you.
Well, thanks. And realize we're talking about 6 years.
Yeah, right.
So it's
that,
not
that helps put it in perspective.
Yeah, it's like it's not a one-year thing here.
And we're also grappling with the issues of just war and looking at the statement of conscience and getting some very different ideas from the congregation on where we should go with that. So I don't know what other people are doing with that. That's something I'd really like to hear about.
Yeah, we probably can learn from some of you in terms of some of the grappling on our own resolution. I think we had some conversation, discussion, and feedback, but I think it's just now gotten to the point where I think we're going to push it to be serious with the statement of conscience coming, that process really come into being. So be very interested in what others of you have done in terms of the peacemaking process in your congregations and what you're finding and how do you think it would be helpful to help, or things we might borrow and work with our folks on.
Bob McCluskey at Cedar Lane Unitarian Church in Bethesda. Question for you about the statement of conscience. Did your church submit thoughts to the Commission on Social Witness as to what your congregation felt should be included in the statement of conscience? And if so, what did you indicate? And if you didn't, what do you think the congregation would emphasize?
Good question. Well, since Mac is our wonderful social justice person and had some conversation, we did more of a kind of some reflecting and sharing. We didn't actually do a formal submittal, and we had the discussion, we had some dialogue, and I must admit, we acknowledged that. We said we didn't end up doing that this year as we had planned. And so I think we're actually now saying what we want to do is to gear up next year for a real intentional and in-depth look at the UUA's approach and what we really want. So I think a lot of what we know is that working, again, some of our strength, one of the things we want to emphasize is trying to really work in partnership, interfaith partnerships, community partnerships, in terms of large-scale transformative change. That's just a really powerful thing that we can't just do it as a UU perspective. I'll speak for me. In my judgment, it's not sufficient. It's important, and we need to have clarity and about where we are and what our understandings are. I think, as I said, we have a mixed congregation, so we're wrestling with the just war, being a peace church. Does that mean pacifism? It doesn't for me. But we haven't taken church-wide positions. We've lifted up topics. We've wrestled with, made some voices, but we haven't had that kind of deep wrestling of where we might end up in a collective way yet.
When you say we've wrestled with this, how do you create forums where that dialogue happens? Is it a regular discussion group, or is it do you call a special event? What's the context?
Some of it's been sermons with discussion afterwards. Some of it has been through the 9:30 discussion group that Mel mentioned earlier.
Okay.
Some of it's been in casual conversations. I think, as Mel pointed out, the just war issue, because some people are saying, no war is ever just, and others are saying, oh, let's wait a minute and talk about that some more and unpack it. To the furthest leaning people who said, well, does this mean we wouldn't need that? We would peacefully, people, it's almost like not an anarchy, except that means without archy. to people wondering if we should even have police officers.
Right.
So there's just this whole gamut of opinions, and we haven't really formally started to rein them in.
You sound
just in the listening process.
I say you sound like a bunch of Unitarians.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
Well, we are. We have, believe me, when I say we have we are across the spectrum in our congregation. It's remarkable. But I think what we've done is to try and create, I mean, the first step for us was to create an arena for people to be able to be speak to one another honestly and to hear one another. And so we have intentionally not trying to advocate so much positions. So we have, well, what you're thinking? What's the perspective? Let's look at the possible scenarios a lot. What are some of the possible scenarios that would play out if this was the way we operated and stuff like that? And then the other thing, honey, we sometimes have what we call covenant groups or small groups.
Right.
And so we've used those. We have three regular ongoing covenant groups. And so we've used those as an occasion to provide discussion around some of these issues as well. And then what we do is that once a month, part of our agreement with discussion groups is that we build on the theme. We do it our own way. We have free latitude to do it any way we want, but we build on the theme that the discussion groups are having that month, so the whole congregation has
the Sunday service is built on the
Sunday
theme.
Service, right.
Oh, that's neat. That's a very nice. Yeah,
yeah,
we don't have that continuity between, you know, different subgroups and the main message, if you will. Yeah.
Well, it keeps it tied. It keeps the covenant groups tied to the congregation, and it gives the congregation a flavor, so they don't feel something crazy is going on or some folks are being elitist and stuff. It's been quite remarkable, actually, and people really feeling like they even if it's only in the service, that they have a little input connection to those who are doing it more in depth.
We had a very good discussion just last Sunday in our equivalent of your 9:30 discussion group using Paul Razor's article from the UU World as a basis.
Right.
And again, it was respectful. There are very divergent viewpoints, but I think whether you agree or disagree with his ultimate position, he raises a lot of very thoughtful issues.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. And we have used that with one of our cover good themes.
Yeah.
Absolutely right.
And once in a while, when we've felt it's necessary or the president of the board has felt it's necessary, we've had town meetings after a service just
right.
to raise an issue and hear what the points of view are.
Yeah, it's been very interesting. We came into a congregation that said we can't take positions, that, you know, there are too many, we're too diverse, and the way we've survived is by not doing that, to an environment now in which even though we don't have a written formal process for doing it, but we have on several occasions collectively found a way to do that. And because we've created these, as Rose said, the town meetings are the open-air sessions. And out of that, people said, well, we think we ought to, or we think it would make sense for our congregation to do this or do that or express this. And it's kind of interesting how that's emerged over the 6 years.
And how large is your congregation?
We're about 125, 30, that range right now. And we've gone up and down. We got killed with... I'm not killed. Sorry. Sorry, bad language.
Extreme.
Sorry about that. We were severely impacted by the chemical industry changing here. When we first came, that's where we were up around that and building. And now just downsized.
Dow Chemical bought out Carbide, which had been really the main employer of the Kanawha Valley. And
many of the people who founded it were scientists and members, you know, of the UU congregation. And so
we lost 12 families.
Wow.
Right off the bat with Dow's closing and moving people out of town. I was like, oh, no.
And our leadership that we were anticipating for the next, you know, 5 or 6 years and quite a bit of financial support. And so we started building back, and we've been doing that. This is the third time we've kind of rebuilt back, and I think we've built a solid new level now to take off from. But because we had a lot of people who had been around and were aging and needed to, quite honestly, be in better health facilities or be with their kids, other places to be safe, they've kind of been hanging on because they love the congregation so much. And probably a compliment in one way, a number of them finally said to us, well, we think we can leave now. And that was a compliment in one sense if they felt the congregation was going to make it and go. But quite honestly, as you know, for all of you, they often were the folks who were the biggest givers and had the largest commitment. So we had to rebuild all that. But it's beginning to happen.
Hello?
Hello? Somebody's phone?
or someone trying to ask a question.
Okay.
Oh, sounds like it's on Mac's end. But has anybody else, you asked the question, who else has been, was involved in the resolution process or has thoughts about that and where they're going with it?
Dressed in something dark. Can make you a spider.
Hello?
Hello? Hello, or is it down to just the three of us?
Who's?
The three?
I should probably, can you hear me?
This is Ellie. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
There's
11
people.
Okay, I'm in San Diego at First Church, First UU Church. And with only three of us on the line?
No,
now?
There are 11.
No.
There are 11. I'm sorry. I knew a couple of people got off. But
okay. For over a year now, I would say that we've been working on this Congregational Study Action Initiative. Mm-hmm. And we've been reading books every month taken from the UU suggested list or choosing books. And we call it the Peacemakers Book Club.
Oh, good. Oh, that's a good idea. Simple.
Yes. And once we even met with another book club because we were reading the same book. And so that has furthered conversation. And so there's that. It makes such good reading and discussions. I think
that's a great idea.
For the people involved, having this go on all the time, every month, is very grounding and deepening, and we get to read many different perspectives. The other thing that a number of us from the congregation have been involved in is the Network of Spiritual Progressives. We have a Peace Book Club.
Right.
And we've dug deeply into Michael Lerner's The Left Hand of God and George Lakoff. Don't Think of an Elephant.
Right, that's good.
But right now, and that's taken us a couple of years. I mean, we've been hanging in here. Right now, we're reading The Search for a Nonviolent Future by Michael Nagler.
Nagler, right.
I don't know if you're acquainted with him.
I haven't actually read it, but I haven't read it.
Well, this is like a revelation to our group, to most people in the group, because everybody in the group wants peace, but it sounds so impractical, and you do this or that, and it's usually anti this or that.
That's correct.
And we really struggled with how to phrase things. According to what George Lakoff had to say, he said, you know, the conservatives are very good at finding two- and three-word sentences to encapsulate what we believe, what they believe, and the liberals or progressives answer in paragraphs, and it gets totally lost, you know.
That's too true.
Besides, we're letting the other group frame the debate, and we're trying to answer in their terms instead of reframing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So now we're reading The Search for a Nonviolent Future, and it is full of illustrations of nonviolence. First of all, we deal with the issue of what violence is, and that's really, I think, important. For us to see what violence is and how it's destroying our society. It's not a random shooting every weekend here and three times during the week, you know, or someone going berserk at home and using a gun. It's the whole issue of violence. And then the issue of power is discussed and different kinds of power. And then what nonviolent power is.
Right.
And what, you know, and it's not just using a force against other people, but that it can be, or that it is a force that's built into life,
mm-hmm.
And that we can tap into it with truth and authenticity. The truth and authenticity inherent in it can speak to other people and other groups. So, and we don't use the word pacifism because most people spell it like passivism and letting everyone walk all over you.
Right.
It's the idea of active, creative, nonviolent or nonviolent resistance. And we're just learning about things going on these days through the Nonviolent Peace Force and third-party intervention and interposition, nonviolent accompaniment and monitoring and presence in different troubled spots in the world, like in Guatemala and Sri Lanka and other places. The possibility of getting a true rapid response team and that kind of thing. And it's becoming more and more evident when you see that there are 100,000 and more people who are children and civilians in Iraq, that there's no way for a war these days to be just. So, you know, we wrestle with all this stuff. But I think until people get a vision of what nonviolence, what active nonviolence and creative nonviolence is, you know, you feel kind of hopeless and helpless, no matter what our heart feels.
That's a good point. Excellent point.
And this book is going into different levels of training, the outer work. What are the necessary ingredients for developing nonviolent responses so they become part of our personality? Now, if they can become part of our personality, that's important behaviors and responses to learn. But it goes deeper, the inner work. How can nonviolence become second nature to me? Am I willing to undertake the training both of my behavior and of my mind? Where the seeds of behavior lie? So there are several levels, a number of levels to this.
And
it's going to be interesting,
actually,
I think,
yeah,
for us to continue this whole struggle, the whole learning process that we're going through.
So do you, like, take this book and work with it for, like, a year?
Well, it took us longer than that to get through the left hand of God.
Right, okay.
Now, the search for a nonviolent future... We maybe read the introduction and the, you know, we read one or two chapters a month or discuss it, two at the most, because there's, no, but we're a group that has been working together for some time now, too.
Can I ask
Ellie,
a question?
Oh,
yeah.
Ellie, do you receive the UUSC publication Rights Now?
Rights Now.
Yeah.
I just got the thing from the UUSC, the mailing.
Yeah, I just want to point you to, on the inside of the front page, there's a piece by Charlie Clements that I think you will find very it's just a one-pager, and he manages to put an awful lot of thoughtfulness about peace and nonviolence in a very condensed space, and I think it will...
I'll look for it, because I know it
really
came
wonderful.
Just, you know, last week.
And
I
want to support... 110% what you're talking about, the studying and the exploration stuff, but I also want to encourage you, and maybe you're doing it, does your group or some of your other members, do you engage in interfacing with the community in any other way or any other faith groups? I mean,
many. yes, we do,
good.
Because we actually have a pretty large congregation.
Good.
And we have many opportunities to pick and choose which group we will work with, yes.
That's terrific, because I just think that's part of the experience. As you have to live yourself into the new paradigm, so you have to understand and have a vision about it, but you also have to act yourself into it. And
yeah.
By being different, by being the different, the new vision, or at least working out the vision as you're living your life, other people pay attention and have a chance to you know, kind of says, hey, pay attention or stop or something's different here, and it that's another way of kind of rippling awareness through the culture. So I think that's important as well.
Yes, yes.
And I think
very good. Well, it sounds like you have a lot going on there, right, in your congregation and community.
Yeah. Well, one of the things is, even though we asked about the numbers, but we're an anomaly in some ways because we function as a large, like a large UU church, because we're in the capital city and
we're the largest one in West Virginia.
we represent the voice of Unitarian Universalism in many ways in West Virginia, and so we have probably an inordinate opportunity to be heard and seen, and so for folks, as Rose says, everybody thinks we're much, I mean, not all of us who are there on Sunday know how large we are, but in the community, people think of us as much larger.
And
because a lot of our members are active, so that's why I said that's that presence piece has kind of rippled our impact, or what we has magnified our presence within, as a force within the community.
And I and the work that we do internally is really important, so that we're not angry peacemakers and, you know.
Right, angry and peacemaking don't really go together.
No, I think there are many people who have no idea how to go about the inner work.
I hear another question. Realize our time and offer another opportunity for other questions.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your sharing.
This is Mac. We're going to stop recording now, but if anybody wants to stay on the line, that's perfectly
all
right. And
Hello.
Stay on, it's fine.
This is Suzanne Osborne from Fairbanks, Alaska.
Fairbanks.
Hi, Suzanne.
Yes, I'm getting a lot out of this. I like that book club idea. Our book club has already talked about wanting to do that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the books that they want to read is The Missing Piece. I don't know if any of you have heard of that book.
I don't know that one.
But it's a